Good afternoon, PGA DFS fans. It's maybe time for some midday coffee, at least for me, as you'll see. I'll start to get a little bit more animated the more that this show moves on. And before we get into talk about the Northern Trust and the top 125 golfers that made the FedEx Cup standings, we want to thank Monkey Knife Fight, the sponsor of our show. And Ben, for me, I got to thank Monkey Knife Fight because I don't have to worry about whether I had Louis Oosthuizen or Patrick Reed in my lineups. No. They withdrew, and I got my money back. It was as simple as that. You don't have to worry about people withdrawing. You don't have to worry about ownership. Nothing like that over there on Monkey Knife Fight with their player props contest. And, of course, your player has to start for the contest to run. So that was the nice thing last week when, of course, Louis and both Patrick Reed withdrew. He was in our prop feature of the week, Ben. And I've got another better one this week. I don't think these guys are going to withdraw. Xander Schauffele. He's one of the guys, and Bryson DeChambeau is the other one. This is the week long, and we know we've seen Liberty National a couple of times. Well, they've set the line at 17 and a half birdies. So Xander and Bryson are just two of the guys that we're going to pick at that number. But I want to hear your first opening thoughts on that line of 17 and a half birdies, which will get us talking a little bit about Liberty National Golf Course.
It's pretty fair. You've got some, the first thing that I always look to are the par fives, whether A, how many there are. I believe there are three here. You correct me if I'm wrong.
Yep, you got it.
That is where you're going to get most of your big time scoring, and they are very attackable. So right there, if you get four rounds, you've got 12 opportunities to make some birdies. You should be converting over 50% of those. That really slashes these numbers, and that's how I try to approach it. You know, you get half there. Now you're looking at, can you make a couple here and there, attack some of the short par fours, and you're there. And these guys are some of the best players in the world. And that is how I like to kind of think about the Monkey Knife Fight props week in and week out.
It's a great way to do it. You start with the par fives, then you work your way from there. See how many par fours are, say, within that 350 to 425 category. And there are a number this week, and we've also seen plenty of good putters putt well. And I see our chat already wants to talk about Russell Henley, and that's not a surprise. Just yet again, breaking our hearts. And not only this time breaking our hearts, but you had to throw in Kevin Kisner, who my co-host here has bet what seems like all year. Last week, well, we'll have to get his opinion on that when we talk about Kisner in a little bit. But let's start off with a little bit more about Liberty National, Ben. Not only just the score, par fives are scoreable, but there's a lot of missed greens this week. What do you make of that? Do you think it was maybe just a little bit of a weather issue back in 2019? We saw a ton of scramblers and good putters in the top 15 of the tournament. Greens in regulation was like 60%. You think that we'll see that again? And if so, should we be tailoring our lineups to it this week?
I think there's something to that. I don't want to overreact because, as you mentioned, this is the FedEx Cup playoffs. This is not, you know, something we see year after year after year, that they changed up the courses and whatnot. It doesn't look like it's overly firm, like you're putting on glass or anything where it's not going to hold. But at the same time, some of these, this is a kind of a technical layout, technical track. You're going to need some scrambling. I definitely will look to that a little more. It's not going to be a straight birdie fest. You get some of the best players in the world here, and that always drives scores down. But this is a pretty fair test of golf as we get the playoffs started.
Now, let me ask you about this since we are talking about the course. There was an article written a couple of years ago that basically did an anonymous poll of PGA Tour players. And this I don't know if you've seen this or not yet, making the rounds. But a lot of them said, more than five said that this was the worst golf course on the PGA Tour rotation. Some of the things they said were like, if it wasn't for the views, the golf course, you know, would have been better. They should have left it as a dump. What do you make of that? And would you, of course, as a DFSer and a bettor, would you like to know that information? Do you think it's actually useful? Or even if a guy hates the course, do you think they can play good on it?
I mean, I definitely think, particularly with good players, they can still play good. But I do take some truth to that. We've talked about this a little before. I find it pretty refreshing. And I certainly weigh negative comments about a course more than positives. I think there's a lot of golfers that no matter what, they say that they love the course and their game is in good shape and they like where they're at. I really take more from guys that say, you know what, this is not my favorite. I don't like the lines. I don't like this. We've seen Brooks do that. Xander's done that a couple of times. And Liberty National, as you mentioned, is one that I think is a pretty polarizing course in that regard. So I'm not going to rule people out because of it, but at the same time, it does seem like some golfers are not super keen to come here.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting talking point, if nothing else. So, all right, let's talk about some of the golfers that are going to actually be here this week. 124 of them. No Louis and no Willie Z. Now, we probably know why Willie Z is not here. And if you don't, well, now you know that he was playing as what's called a special temporary membership, even though he could have been ranked 26th in the FedEx Cup. Crazy. And because of that, you have to win to actually be qualified for the FedEx Cup playoffs. He didn't do that. As good as he played, he didn't do that. So he'll get a chance next year. He actually also was still in the top 25 of the Korn Ferry Tour rankings, which just crazy that we have to talk about that. He is one of the best players in the world now, believe it or not. And Louis Oosthuizen withdrew last week from Sedgefield. I don't know if he was ever scheduled to play here this week. He certainly doesn't have to. But maybe a little nervous there, given that he did withdraw with a neck injury. At least that's what it's cited as, Ben.
Yeah, it's not ideal, but he's not here. He's one of the few. And, you know, we still have got the best of the best. And that's what we have this time of year. The field size shrinks. The elite players, it's a sprint to the finish. So we'll see what Louis has when we see him next. He's accumulated enough points. He doesn't really care or worry, but it was interesting. It's always, you know, the cut sweats, Chesson Hadley last week. That was a really cool thing. Rose miss it. Like very interesting around that 125.
How about that 1 point? Chesson Hadley throws up a hole in one, goes ridiculous ever. After that, his first ever. And then gets six under other than that and still has to have Justin Rose miss a putt on 18 to miss the playoff, then to actually get into the playoffs. As weird as that all sounds, that's exactly how it went down. Really incredible. Great story. So another great story is we've got English Premier League soccer back in action, and we've got a nice little promo for you guys. If you want to check out our EPL DFS projections, use promo code free soccer and you're going to get our first week of that free. And of course, if you're looking to join us on the golf side, well, use PGA Strategy Show as your promo code and you're going to get 25% off your first week of Osmo Plus Platinum for new members only there. So check us out, of course, behind the paywall. And if you want to see some of the premium tools we got going on today, well, our top pitchers tool for the MLB, which of course, the MLB deeper dive shows will be following our hour here on us. So stay tuned for that. So, all right, now let's get into talk about some players, some blue chips. After all, it is the Northern Trust. They're in my neck of the woods. They manage money and do all that fun things. And of course, can't manage money without blue chips in your portfolio. Right, Ben?
I wouldn't know sadly about anything about blue chips. I'll have more when we get to the bad terms, but
the penny stocks, if you will. Sure.
You want these type of guys. And like I said, we've got a lot to choose from at the top of the board. You know, last couple of weeks, we've seen the Deckies of the world grace us up there and whatnot. Just for context, Hideki's $9,000 this week. He's about the 15th highest priced player. All the elites are here and Rahm takes back over his title as the most expensive golfer.
Yeah, and for Decky, he seems like he's on one of those ridiculously good tee to green runs. If you look at his stats right now, look at his approach numbers, strokes gained over the last little bit. We saw this over the summer one period where Decky just could not miss. Now, we see something like last week, though, at Sedgefield where you need to make birdies if his putter isn't going as good as it should be or at all. He can still miss cuts, but something to take a look at. All right, let's start up at John Rahm. Two times the COVID is two times the wins. I don't know. Seems to be what's trending for John Rahm here this week. 11,500, though. When you match up him and Dustin Johnson, Johnson definitely does seem overpriced. I don't know that he's done anything to warrant an 11,000 price tag. John Rahm, yeah, 11,500. He hasn't finished outside of the top eight since the PGA Championship, so that totally makes sense. And Jordan Spieth, the only golfer in the field that has five starts over the last 12 weeks and finished all in the top 25 in all of them. So maybe for Rahm and Spieth, it makes sense, but Johnson, it does not. Have any other takes?
Not really. I mean, there's always, it's very early in the week. Ownership will tell a tale, but when you're up at the elite levels, everybody's got ownership. Like DJ, he might not be as popular, but you're not going to find, no one's playing him. People go to him on name recognition, and that shakes off the appeal of, I'm just going to blindly back him. We know he's got the talent. He can turn it on at any point, but there's no discussion that if you're talking about recent form, and kind of who comes in ready to kind of go, Rahm, Spieth, Xander off a gold medal, all these guys are playing much better golf.
Yeah, they are. Now, what do you do with Xander? He's next on the board, 10,600. Obviously, we saw a big spot of regression, which I think most of us maybe planned for. He definitely celebrated more so than we've ever seen Xander celebrate with that gold medal. Right next to him, you have Colin Morikawa as well at 10,400. And when he starts to get into this, you know, high tens, low nines, he seems to pay off. So what do you do with these two guys specifically? And if you want to play Rom, do you think you can get somebody else in this range, or do you think we have to avoid it altogether?
It's going to be tricky. I mean, just Rom, Xander, you're looking sub seven already for the four remaining spots. Yep. That's going to be a tough sell. Probably not this week for me, but yeah, I mean, there's no doubt you can go balanced. I do think Morikawa is interesting in that he mitigates. He does it differently. When you tell me there's a course, there's going to be a lot more around the green play than usual, I don't think about him per se. But he's so good with the irons that he might be the exception to the rule, where he just hits so many greens, it doesn't really matter.
Perfect example of this is the Open Championship. It's one that everybody suggests you need creativity around the greens. But when you're hitting 80 or more percent of your greens, you don't need to worry that much about your around the green game. Point taken with Colin Morikawa. If he hits 75% or more of his greens, it won't matter. Does that apply to other golfers? Well, maybe Hideki right now, actually, Ben, looking at the stats right now. Plus, Hideki is sneaky good around the green. We'll get talking about him in a bit. Brooks Koepka, he's a guy that if his putter is playing well or if it's going well, he could be in the mix this week, but it seems a little expensive when you got Rory right behind him, who actually does seem to be getting things together, maybe got a little bit motivated at the Olympics because the results have certainly been a little bit better since then.
Yeah, I mean, tee to green wise, Rory is it's not sustained, but he's back to his pre-COVID domination levels. Yeah. At St. Jude, he gained over five strokes off the tee and with the approach. That's absolutely massive. He just couldn't putt at all. And he's not the best putter in the world, but he's not someone that's an elite struggle on the putter. He can turn it around. He's a fine putter. I don't think people really give Rory the credit he deserves on the green sometimes, but I'm not there on Brooks. I get it. Listen, it's Brooks. I prefer him more on Bermuda anyway. Give me the savings, even though it's slight, to Rory, or I'll go all the way to the top, Rahm or Spieth.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty much in line with you. I like Morikawa. I think that it's been now a couple of weeks away from that Open Championship win. We've had a two kind of rough start since then, or not as good. And he came in the top 30 at the WG FedEx last week, or 2 weeks ago, I should say, without gaining a stroke with his approaches. We'd have to go back quite a bit to see something like that. So I don't think it's going to continue. We saw a bounce back after the Scottish Open when he did that. So I think that's when we're in a spot here. So Spieth, Morikawa, Rory, definitely my targets up here. I think Rahm is too expensive. I think even if he wins this week, you could see a situation where so many golfers from the, say, 10-4 to 8,000 range are in the top 10, where you can avoid even having to have him in your lineup. So early on in the week, of course, salary just dropped, you know, 4 hours ago or so. That's my lean right now. Let's talk about Justin Thomas and Bryson before we move on. Justin Thomas has had just nothing going on for over a couple months now. You and I have tried to get him going. We've tried to play him. Is this just a true avoid until he's in the top five again?
He's just – I would say yes, but I still see that he's so close. I mean, he can't putt, and the putter has been broken. There's no doubt he lost another five strokes at St. Jude, but his irons are still very good. I'm going to look to try to get exposure. This is what I'm going to do with JT. I know that it's there. I just don't know how I want to do it. I might look to him in the betting markets.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, is this a situation where we look at 28 or even 30 to one in a few spots and say, if he wins, I'm going to be able to cover everything on DFS and way more with a simple bet on him and just not play him again, like I said, until we see a top five.
I don't mind that. Even opening up to a top five, and that'll cover basically all the situations where he's really going to hurt you.
Yep.
In the DFS side, I think it's there. It's just the downside of a guy who can't putt right now is really detrimental for him. He's got no start better than 19th since the beginning of May. That's just unacceptable for a guy like JT. He's too good to do that, but it's been the putter. So I'm going to get exposure to him. You're probably going to see him mentioned maybe in the PGA Contenders video tomorrow. I just don't know if I want to do it in the DFS side just yet.
Yeah, I think I'm there. I think if he was, say, 9,200 or somewhere around the Hideki price, I'd be much more interested. But we're still having to pay a top 10, top, say, 7 salary on a guy that hasn't come in the top 7 in quite some time. So I think I'm right on board with you there. Bryson DeChambeau, though, I think maybe that's where things start to pick up, as he's looks like he's done everything. But when he gets to Sunday, those Brooksy comments are clearly getting to him. Here's the bottom line. We could talk about, is it right for the fans to be doing this? Should Bryson be letting it affect him? We could talk about that probably for a couple hours. But the bottom line is it's real. It's definitely hurting him. And until something gives, whether Brooks comes out and says, Bryson's my best friend, or Bryson gets the tour to tell people to stop, it's not going to. Does that make him unrosterable in DFS, or maybe just unbettable on the betting side?
Yeah, it's a tough situation. I mean, you're right. We could do a whole show on that, because it's something you rarely see, if ever, in golf. Yeah. And it is affecting him. I don't think there's any doubt. Still such a good player. Obviously, when he gets going with the putter, but you are incurring an unquantifiable, I don't even say risk, it's just another thing. And I definitely think that it's there. So ownership will tell the tale. At Bryson, you know, he himself lowered his expectations at St. Jude, and then he played very, very well coming off the COVID situation. I am a little apprehensive, and it's more just the opportunity cost. I know we just talked about JT. Rory's only $400 more. Scheffler is $300 left. Cantlay is $400 left. I think that's where I'm initially drawn in this 9K range.
Yeah, it seems like there's certainly a lot of good fits in this 9K range, which I've labeled our mid caps, because in our diversified portfolio, going to definitely need a few mid caps in there. And the guy that I want to start talking about with is Daniel Berger. Reason why is everything looks pretty good. And this is not something you hear from me all that much, but 4 top 10s in his last 5 starts. Strokes gained on the approach looks really good. He does struggle around the green, so maybe that's the case against him. But this guy with 2 good starts, or maybe even getting to the Tour Championship, he could get himself into the Ryder Cup conversation, which we know all these guys love, and Berger was pretty good with his one time on it. So I peg you Daniel Berger as maybe my top pick, unless you think around the green is going to matter that much. Top pick in this range.
I always take more.
It's a big stretch for me.
Yeah, but that just shows that the numbers really are backing it up, because, you know, there are certain golfers, when it's close, you probably err on the side of just liking them or not. Berger's one of those guys. This is a good course for him. He's a great player, there's no doubt, but he also has a theme. He likes the places that he likes, and we've seen this time and time again at TPC Southwind and some of these other technical layouts. He can just lean on those irons. Could he get in trouble around the green? Yes, but I also put him, he's not Morikawa with the irons, clearly. But he is in that range right now of he can mask some of that with just pure ball striking. And I think he's good enough that he will do that, actually.
Yeah, same here. I think Matsuyama is the other one I want to talk about in this range. He's just playing so good. And he doesn't have the around the green troubles that Berger does. He's got the on the green troubles. However, Liberty National in 2019 ranked one of the top 10 easiest courses to putt on. Now, it's the age-old saying, do we want good putters on easy fits? Because I look at Jordan Spieth's numbers, and we all know that 2019 was the worst year of his professional career. Still found a way into the top 5 of this event, and he gained 8 strokes putting that week. So maybe we would say, well, good putters putt better on easy greens. But then you look at some of the other bad putters that were there as well. Adam Scott's come in the top 5 here a couple of times. He's a good putter now, though, believe it or not. I don't know if you would have known that on Sunday afternoon at 4, you know, with the 4-footer that he missed. But it's kind of a microcosm of Scott. He's the next one we're going to discuss. He is the only golfer in the field to have come in the top 10 both events here in 2019 and 13. You take any stock in that? He said 8,400, so maybe a little bit of ownership going his way.
I do take some stock. It is an age-old question. To me, I've always said that it flattens it both ways. Now, that maybe I'm wrong about that, but to me, you're less likely to see an extreme performance, negative or positive, on super easy greens. It just, these guys are all, I think, more bunched up. And the good putters still are going to make more, but I think the bad putters get a boost from that. Adam Scott is bizarro world. Adam Scott, as you've mentioned, coming off that deck, he's the one. Yeah, if he can get it rolling, it's definitely there. And then I'm gonna go to Paul Casey a little bit, who's just all year really just so absolutely good. Crushed it with the irons. He's just been fantastic.
Really has. And he's another one that's kind of like Hideki that doesn't struggle around the green, only struggles on the green. So definitely like Paul Casey. Plus, he's at 8,700. I like the fact that he's priced right next to Harris English, who obviously people love to click. We don't have to deal with him at 7,600 this week, though, thankfully. If he's going to be 8,800 and chalky, well, I guess I'll let him beat me. We'll have to see how the ownership comes out.
He will.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem. Are you in a situation where you just want to play him, or are you just going to keep riding the fade train like I have?
I mean, I truly am going to try to take the what I'm going to call the responsible move, and I'm just going to evaluate him as I always do. But I'll tell you what, Harris English is extremely popular once again, as he usually is. More often than not, I'm not able to get leverage, and he's been great. His around the green numbers are very, very good. His off the tee game is weak. The putter is inflated right now. I would rather have Casey. I would rather have Decky. I would firmly rather have Berger, and I don't see how that changes.
All right, let's blitz back up to the top of this range. Talk about Victor Hovland, who is semi-built like a middle linebacker, if you will. And before we talk about Hovland, I do want to tell everybody about our promo code that we have going on for those NFL DFS fans. Now, come on and grab our early bird special for Osmo Plus NFL Annual Pass by using promo code BLITZ, and you're going to get 25% off the yearly price. And of course, that's going to give you access to all of our preseason projections, which have been pretty darn good, and so much more. Again, that's promo code BLITZ for 25% off your annual NFL pass. Just click the link in the description in this video, and you will see it there. So plenty of opportunity to get it. Now let's go ahead and talk about Victor Hovland. Kind of just been there, Ben. Hasn't really given too much, but also hasn't given too little. Do we like that here this week, or are we going to maybe save it for a no-cut top 70 at the BMW next week?
I'm more apt to wait. This is a guy, unlike some of the people we talked about, his around the green game is weak. It's not average. It's not below average. It's just he's made some strides, but he is not a good around the green player. He's a dominant driver of the ball. I don't think that's the stat that I would correlate most with Liberty National at all. He's a great player. So of course he's in play. That's, that's not breaking any news. We know that Scheffler is there. Cantlay is there. All the guys we just discussed. Can't play them all, and Hovland's someone more than likely I'll live without.
Yeah. Our buddy Mike Campbell in the chat wants to know just why Justin Rose's flop isn't getting more press. Two reasons. One, he just won the Payne Stewart Award, so there's no chance that they're going to give him any negative press after that. And number two, the Chess and Hadley story kind of taking over the bad side of the Justin Rose missing out on it. The Chess and Hadley is a pretty good story, too. And we're definitely going to get into Hadley talk in the penny stock section. I definitely want to bring him up because I think he's a worthy candidate there. But before we do, let's talk about Abraham Ancer. Breakthrough victory there at the WGC. Been trending very well. Is this a case that you and I talk about that it's a breakthrough win for a guy that we didn't think would win? Or is it one of those floodgate wins where now we're going to see a couple?
He's definitely closer to floodgates than some of the guys where I think if you ask most people, most golf fans, most people in the chat, will Abraham Ancer win? Most people are going to say, yeah, it's a matter of time. It's not a guy who's in danger of losing his card and he's secured status for multiple years now. This is a good player. So do I think there's some exhale? Of course, but he's just a guy that could keep it rolling. No doubt. Very accurate off the tee. Everything else checks out. I think he's a fine play, but I'm going to stick with my same guys of Berger and Cantlay and Scheffler right below him.
Yeah, let's talk about Cantlay. Haven't yet. I believe they seed by FedEx Cup ranking right now. So definitely going to be a mouth-drooling worthy day for me on Thursday and Friday as Spieth, Morikawa, Cantlay are going to be the threesome. Yeah, that's going to be a fun day. I'm sure they'll have them on featured group coverage, so I'll be glued to the TV. But in addition to being glued to the TV, Patrick Cantlay does statistically set up very well here. He's one of the best, if not the best, scrambler on the PGA Tour this year. Lately, though, Ben, it's been the putter, and it's been very bad. Bad to the point where I think he had, only 13 or 14 birdies a couple of weeks ago at the WGC. FedEx just couldn't get anything going. So do we want to roster Cantlay and hope that the putter is going to come around this week, or do we need to actually see it come through before we click the name, especially at above 9,000? when we got Decky, when we got Berger right there.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't fault anyone if they wanted to wait, but I will say Cantlay is good enough, and all these guys up here, if you wait, he might just win. Like, he's
just gonna win, right?
He's just gonna win. So you kind of have to buy in when it's not perfectly lined up sometimes, and you know, you're splitting hairs. I said with DJ, I didn't really want to do that. With Cantlay, I think it's closer. The ball striking's been very solid. It's almost like at Memorial, and again, I know that was a weird situation, but like it looked like, oh, he found something at the PGA. And then if you waited, he just wins and you missed it. So I'm going to try to buy early per se on Cantlay here. I think it's a good spot.
Webb Simpson.
Oh God.
When we talk about Sedgefield next year, we'll discuss how he came out of the top five for the first time in a long time. But in reality, he gave away so many, missed that big playoff by one. All in all, though, it actually does look better. He looks physically a lot better than when I was saying, stay away, stay away, stay away. Last 2 weeks, we've seen good results. Come to a golf course, though, that has a little bit more teeth to it, I would say, than Sedgefield and TPC Southwind. So maybe that affects him, but the price hasn't come back up. So I guess I'm all in all saying, I think I'm all right with Webb Simpson this week.
I'm somewhat indifferent. He actually, ironically, last week, for the first time ever, I feel like Webb backers got a raw deal. He just
lights out ball striking,
like ridiculous ball striking. He made two giant mistakes that he doesn't make those. He's holding the trophy.
Yeah.
I feel okay with him. I still definitely prefer Decky right above for $100. And I'm interested to see ownership on Webb if it carries over. It feels like people know that Wyndham is kind of a separate entity with him. Yeah. And this is like different. So I wouldn't be stunned to see him pretty reasonably owned, but nothing crazy.
By and large, if you faded him like I did and found your way down to Russell Henley off of that, it was a good fade last week. He came in seventh. But if you played Zalatoris like I did, who came in 29th, wasn't really the right play all that much. A couple of more guys in this mid-cap range. Corey Connor seems a bit overpriced. Hasn't quite got there lately. Joaquin Niemann, though. Maybe I wrote down not a ton of upside, but he's actually been right there. So Niemann, Connors, Tony Finau. Those are your bottom guys at the 8K range, Ben. Sam Burns thrown in there as well. Let's start with Niemann, though. You like to play him a decent amount. Seemed like a good whisper of Joaquin. So is it time to roster him again, especially at flat 8K? I feel like it's a good buy.
It's definitely a guy that I like targeting Niemann because you know where you're getting. There's not a lot of in between. If he's off, you're dead because he's one of, if not the worst, around the green player of anyone we're going to talk about besides the real cheapies. So if he's missing a ton of greens, it's just not going to work. But when Niemann is on, he's an elite scorer. He outscores his placement points often. He's a great iron player. He can putt. I like Niemann as a tournament play more often than not because the upside is huge and the downside is absolute death. That's what you need in large field GPPs. You can't have all conservative plays.
No, you certainly can't. I think it is a very good question that Spaz just asked us in the chat. Niemann versus Sam Burns. Burns has been en fuego with the putter now for quite some time. So if that keeps up, I think it's maybe a closer match than we'd like to think, but I still am going to lean Niemann here for me. I don't know that. The withdrawal at the PGA Championship is still stinging me.
Burns is one of the people, I don't look at splits a ton, but he, with him in particular, Bermuda is really where he thrives with the putter. He's an LSU guy. He's a Bermuda guy. I'm a little concerned about that aspect of this as this is at Liberty National. So I'm going to go with Niemann. I also think long-term Niemann is just going to be a better player. Both very talented, but I'm a Niemann fan.
Yeah, I think that one's pretty close. Okay, so around the green play, we've kind of emphasized is a more indicative this week of good results. And a guy that's been quietly getting a lot better at it, but still, maybe we don't want him to be getting better at it because he's leaving himself a bunch of 4 or 5 footers for par that he's missing. Maybe he should just put it to 14 or 15 feet and he'll make it. I'm talking about Tony Finau, whose price in a full field, it's got to be one of the cheapest I've seen in a while. And no one's talking about him. Everyone's down on him. So do we want to jump on Tony Finau this week here at Liberty National, or is it just not there? Don't care about the price.
I would love, you know, if you build enough teams, I think this is still a guy worth pursuing. But if you're looking at the stats, and that's what is the key indicators, it's been pretty bad. He's lost with the irons in four straight recorded events that we have strokes gain data for.
It's terrible.
He's not really doing anything, and that is why we see the price drop. It's very un-Finau-like. Normally, it's, yeah, he's great, but he's not going to win. He hasn't even been in the picture, and that is very concerning.
Big talk last week during the play. Guys over at Barstool said that if Kevin Kisner is not picked for the Ryder Cup team this year, he, an American, will be rooting for the Europeans. He got lambasted for that, got absolutely demolished, and then Kisner wins. It's just serendipitous. It's just how it happens. Now, take this twofold. Does that make his argument more relevant? And do you want to play him here this week?
Probably makes the argument a little more relevant. I'll give him that. No, that was a tough one. I've backed Kisner a lot this year. Backed him at St. Jude. I've bet him, as you mentioned, a lot, and didn't have him last week in the outright market. Saw some people in chat that did, though, and that is awesome. Congrats there. Some really good
hammer the name in enough where they knew to click the name.
They knew. Kisner, listen, he does that. But the thing is, he's not super consistent. Like, he spikes, and then he just fades into irrelevance. I think that's more often than not what we're going to see here. I'd rather play basically everybody else around him.
Is Fitzy one of those guys? A guy that I legitimately, when I tell you I never get right, truly never get this guy right. 8,800 WGC FedEx. I was lined up. I thought it was a great play and did nothing for me. I'm sure I won't play him in the 7,900 and we'll get the top 10 this week.
I don't really understand what's going on with him, because he's figured out his driving to an extreme extent. He's extremely accurate, but he's added some distance. Now all of a
very
sudden,
Abraham answer off the tee-ish. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's just not himself lately with the short game. And that's normally a crafty guy. He lost, and listen, St. Jude, there's water in play. He lost 5.7 strokes around the green. That's his worst ever in any recorded event on the PGA Tour. So I'm willing to forgive him a little bit, but Fitzy's got to get back to really rolling it well, because that's where he was making his money. Is, you know, he's masked a lot of his problems with making putts.
Rather go to his Ryder Cup teammate or suspected Ryder Cup teammate. I don't know how they're doing their qualifications, but I'm sure this guy would be at the top or near Ty Hatton. I think he's in a much better spot than Fitzy. He hasn't played as much golf as him, so maybe we don't have as much, you know, information, but everything seemed to be going pretty good a couple of weeks ago at Southwind until I think he found one of those water hazards that you just mentioned, or maybe found it twice and then probably broke three clubs and had some good audio video. Still, Hatton this week, I like him.
Yeah, listen, Hatton's just a really good player. He's not, clearly he's regressed from form that he probably couldn't keep up anyway. Lean on the irons, really good scrambler. Got to make some more putts, but we've seen him at some technical layouts, you know, down in Florida at Heritage, things like that. I think he's going to like Liberty National long-term if he plays here enough. So I have no problem. And we're talking about price tags, second, third, fourth man in a balance build.
So let's talk about price tag for a second. A couple of weeks ago at the WGC, there were four guys that I loved at 8K. It was Answer, who ended up winning, Cam Smith, Corey Connors, and Joaquin Neiman. I think Neiman ended up paying off decently, and Connors did nothing. Cam Smith, another pretty good week. He doesn't get as much of the price bump as Answer does, only in at 8,500. We haven't talked about him, but I think he sets up pretty well. And talk about a guy that's figured out off the tee. He's one of the top 10 in strokes gained off the tee over the last 12 weeks. So Cam Smith trending in the right direction here. I like him a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Cam Smith is a guy that, when the off the tee game cooperates, watch out, because everything else he does. I mean, I assume, you know, you watch a ton of golf. I saw Cam Smith had 18 putts in a round recently. That's insane. I mean, like, what are we doing here? The guy is unbelievable when he rolls it. It's a little hit or miss. You know, his irons are fluky. His off the tee is fluky. But when you have that type of electric ability, I can get there, and the ownership I don't think will be much, because he's in a pretty elevated price tag.
Yeah, he's surrounded by, you know, the Simpsons of the world, the Patrick Reed defending champion, yeah. Who probably good that he got the week off last week. He was, you know, traveling the world quite a bit. You and I even suggested, we're like, wow, he has really done a lot of traveling, and it goes to show, didn't want to play last week. I don't mind him this week. Won't get a ton of interest for me. Next two guys, I actually did get right last week. Brian Harman and Jason Kokrak, both were big fades for me. I thought they were way too pricey, but now about $2,000 cheaper, I'm interested. I know we're at a little edge of the salary spectrum, but let's talk about those three guys. Reed, Kokrak, Harman.
Difficult. You know, Harman, we know what he's going to do it with the putter. Reed, kind of the same way. And Kokrak, during his run, I mean, he's an aggressive driver of the ball, but it was all with the putter in some regards. I think this course probably sets up best for, and just these three guys, to me, Reed is still firmly the best player. You know, now you're getting a price tag that kind of cooperates with that. So I get it. I think I would lean more to the technical Harmans and Reed over Kokrak this week.
I'd rather fade them all and go down to Ian Poulter and Sergio Garcia. I know I didn't give you that option, but I'm going to give myself that option,
I guess.
Fair.
Here.
That's fair. Poulter's playing much better, and so is Sergio Garcia. Sergio Garcia, tee to green. I mean, he's in one of those, just one of those stretches of golf where it seems like he can't miss with anything else except for the putter, which means he can't make anything. But at 7,500, Ben, he gives us another top 15, top 20, which is what he's been doing. We're going to love that in our main lineup.
Oh, no doubt. Again, this is where opportunity gets pretty wide. You know, you don't need a win. You don't need any, like, if you play solid golf in the mid sevens, you become a staple of a really useful lineup. And that's something a lot of these guys, like, even, you know, you mentioned Bolts, I see it. So it's more about ownership. I know that's not the best answer on a Monday, but it's true. I think some of these guys are going to be squeezed, and that's why I want to lean on our premium tools to see, okay, if this guy is going to be identified in our leverage tool as a guy no one's going to, I like it. And Poulter could certainly fit that bill.
For sure. So you think most people are going to go to Garcia in this range? And then I guess I'll throw out to Shane Lowry, who's another guy that is actually quietly playing pretty good.
I feel like most people are soured on Sergio just because it's time and time again, you get what you want and he can't putt. I mean, he lost another four strokes putting at St. Jude. That was seven at the 3M. It's ridiculous. Great ball striker, incredible driver of the ball. He's the worst putter in the field. I don't think that's a stretch at all.
Would you rather do Lowry over Garcia with that fact? Given that Lowry four straight top 25 is very similar in terms of how they actually finished, very similar. Now, how they did it, probably not all that similar.
I think I would at this point. Unless I'm going very vanilla and I'm saying, you know what, I'm going to lean heavily on drivers and I have pretty standard guys. I want a wild card. I'm going to roll the dice with Sergio. I think more often than not, my team would fit Lowry.
Jeez, I feel like we have too many Europeans here. Ty Hatton, Shane Lowry. True. Might have to just do an all-European lineup when it is time for us to build one. We're not going to do that. I don't know. I don't think we're going to be able to do that, given that we both like Cantlay at 9,200. We both seem to like Spieth. And, I mean, I guess we could do Rahm. We'll check that out when it's time to come. Let's talk about a couple more guys, though, before we build our lineups here in the mid-cap range. Keegan Bradley, Kevin Na, Jason Day. Three very different players that I decided to group together for you. Jason Day, we really have no clue what's going on. Kevin Na seems to disappear, kind of similar to what you said about Kevin Kisner. Kevin Na kind of does the same thing. A big time finish kind of is like, okay, I like my money. I like my whatever he likes to do after a good finish. And then there's Keegan Bradley who, yeah, if he matches the field in putting, he'll be there again.
Three really interesting names. Now you're getting into tournament plays for sure. Yep. Like Jason Day might not be owned at all, probably warranted, but at the same time, I still think if he's going to try to gear it up for a stretch run, maybe it's here. You mentioned Keegan, the best ball striker of the three for sure, but the worst putter. Kevin Na, I don't think I'm going to chase you. You summed it up. He spikes out of nowhere. Very rarely does Na string together big time, you know, elite performances. It's more couple miscuts, couple nothings, and then like a third out of nowhere.
Just what he does.
It is.
All right. Yeah. Let's talk about some small caps. And of course, you know, these aren't going to be heavily weighted in our portfolio. You know, we're not trying to have too much Dogecoin or
get that stuff out of
like
here.
That. You know, they can really ruin a portfolio. I know all about that. Or, of course, in the small caps, if you get one right, they can provide some pretty healthy returns. Not quite as good as penny stocks could, but penny stocks can also take all your money. We'll get to those in a bit. First, we'll talk about Siwoo Kim, who is a clear course history guy. There's just no doubt about it. He likes the courses he does. Another top five at Sedgefield. That's his fourth, coming up on really Webb Simpson territory at that tournament. He just seems to love it. So, I mean, we just blindly played him here, or maybe it's not blindly. Maybe it's he doesn't have any good results or hasn't played here and we don't need to play him.
Yeah, I'm more that than anything else. He's just all over the map. His strokes gain data is basically impossible to decipher because it's at St. Jude, crazy things happened, you know, with his 13.
You know, what did he lose, like 9 strokes on the approach just right there?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he lost 17 strokes on the approach for the week, which is like unheard of. That's an out. Obviously, you just throw that out. We saw it last week, but that's a course. He is in a bucket where I treat that separately. I'm not drawn to much of this range. As we work to the low sevens, I think Max Homa is probably the guy that I initially was drawn to.
Yeah, I got a couple of things here. Lowry does seem like a guy that you would want to enjoy a pint with, maybe the most so on the PGA Tour. Honestly, just the guy always has a smile on his face. Even when he's mad, it looks like he's smiling.
He seems like a good dude. Yeah,
he does. He really does. All right. Bubba Watson. Ball striking looks good, but the putter trending towards Sergio Garcia bad. So you just roster them both and hope that they both hit their putter. Is that the strategy this week?
I mean, I do think there's something, again, if I'm going to roll the dice with aggressive drivers, I'll probably take a couple of them together. Why not? I tried to back Bubba last week. You know, and it's just Bubba's been a passion project when he's not getting ownership and whatnot. And it really isn't happening right now. He's not missing cuts, but he's not doing much. So tournament play, sure. Preferred target, probably not.
Yeah, I think he's down, 2,000 from his price last week.
Yeah,
so
big drop.
It's not like he played bad, but he still made the cut. So at 7,200, where he is this week, it's a little bit easier for a return. Cam Champ, Tokyo Swan just brought him up in our chat. Thanks, TS. I agree. Seems like it's in good form. We're a start removed away from the big win or the kind of the breakthrough win. Here's an interesting tidbit. His caddy told him to switch balls before the round. Sometimes it's something as simple as that that gets him clicking. And we know that, I've tried my best to chronicle that the ball striking has been there this year. It's really been the short game that's been bad. We saw the short game turn and all of a sudden the guy wins. This is kind of the MO about Cam Champ though, right? Wins kind of one of those low scoring events, disappears for a year, comes up in a no cut because he throws in 3 eagles, top 20 at Augusta, goes away forever. So is he going to go away forever? See him in April at Augusta again, or should we try and ride the train?
I think the way I do it, again, it's with buckets, Bubba, Sergio, Champ, Wolf, Vegas.
Yeah.
Really big drivers of the ball. Wolf Huge and Champ are out of control, erratic. I don't think I'm going to be drawn there, to be honest. If they're 1% owned, maybe. But Champ coming off some of that, I almost feel like it's counterintuitive. But when Champ is in form, if the ownership catches up, I have almost less interest. I'd rather back him blindly when no sane person would go there because he can win out of, as we've seen, from the clouds.
Jeff Ulrich and I say the best time to play Cam Champ is under 7,000, under 10% owned, in a no cut. You basically have no risk there because you know you're getting 4 rounds of a guy that could hit driver wedge into some par 5. So that's kind of the philosophy we take, or like you said, kind of blindly take him maybe on one spot of form like we saw and then the win. So yep, I'm okay with Champ, but the price, a little bit too much. You got Sebastian Munoz, who is boom or bust right there, as well as Max Homa. Two guys on that spectrum. Then you've got a guy like Brandon Grace, who is having quietly an incredibly good season. I think Brandon Grace is the best value on the board this week. Last time I tried to say that, he ended up missing the cut. He's not going to do that again here this week, is he?
I hope not. Because he definitely stands out. Was right there last week, of course, playing really good. Heritage seen success, a lot of technical layouts. He doesn't mind tough conditions if that happens. I don't think that will, but
30th here in 2019, I think. Decent score. Not bad for 7,200.
Everything checks out. Now, you will have some pivots. Leishman is there. You could back him blindly because it's Leishman, Griot. If you want a ball striker who, once again, he has to go Morikawa.
Yep.
Griot cannot survive around the green. There's no chance. But if you think he gets crazy hot with his irons, he can absolutely do that.
Yeah, I love talking about that type of strategy where we know that only 60% of the greens in regulation are going to be hit on average. But if you get a guy like Griot, who's in that bucket, like Matsuyama, like Morikawa, who can hit 80% of their greens and put it close, it negates the off the green stuff. So I love talking about that strategy and trying to pinpoint those guys that can do it while mixing them in with the speeds and reads of the world.
Yeah, just think about it. Like, you know, I know we got to like golf, but I just think about like other sports, you know, a team, they don't have a field goal kicker. Okay. Yeah. Well, if you don't have to ever kick, it doesn't matter. Like now, if you're kicking, you're going to be exposed, but Griot, it puts more pressure on your irons because he doesn't have an additional out like other guys, but he could get it done like that. There's no doubt about it. It's just a lot of more risk that you have to endure.
Just about 8 minutes left here. Seamus Power, ooh, both you and I were like, let's take a step back. 8,500 seems like a good price, but let's take a step back, let him make the cut and get his feet underneath him. He did everything we wanted him to. And we, you know, I faded him. I think you did too. Certainly everything did. Worked out. Now it's flat 7K a week afterwards, coming into a week where around the green, which seems to be kind of his MO, works out. I think I'm in on Seamus Power 7K this week.
Felt like we have a really good read on him. We both backed off at the right time, worked out well. Definitely more interested, but I have to ask you, the guy who killed me, maybe it was Ricky the most, the guy who killed me the real most last week was Gary Woodland. Yeah. I do not understand what happened. He tried to make a furious rally. He went 4 under in his last three, still didn't get it done. I love the price. I don't love three missed cuts in the last four.
Yeah, thrown in with the top seven at the Barracuda, right?
Yeah, good point. I don't even have the Barracuda in there. Which, he did that to secure the card, and now what the hell is he doing with it?
So it's almost as if he's not involved in the tournament, he doesn't care. And after that opening round, even par of 70, it was either I'm shooting 62 to get back in this or going home for a couple of days. He's trending toward the Sebastian Munoz Max Homa train, which is I'm either playing 2 days or I'm playing four and getting in the top 15. So for me, it's a good GPP target. You're making 20, 50, 100 lineups, definitely in there. You're making one. I know the price tag is appealing. I get it. But I think Seamus Power seems like a more consistent play. He hasn't missed a cut in quite some time. And as you just mentioned, Woodland, three of his last five, he's been packing his bag. So, yeah, Woodland does have 2 years. He played in both 19 and 13. I think he made the cut in both. So if you want to look at that for course history or course comfort, maybe there's a little bit of it there.
Yeah, I mean, Woodland's a good player, but I'm with you. I think, and as we work down, I know we got a couple minutes left for these salary savers, as you call them, the penny stocks.
Yeah.
This is where you get rich or completely poor when you roster guys like Maverick.
Yeah, so Maverick's a guy. I'm glad you brought him up first. He's on like five straight or four straight top 25s. Now, no top 10s, but at 6,900 with a guy that can put the lights out when he gets going, he's one of these penny stocks that I'm going to be playing this week. Another guy that I'm going to be playing turned into a putting specialist. When we first saw this guy break out on the European Tour and then on the PGA Tour, we thought he'd be like Morikawa kind of only iron type of guy, but Garrett Kigo really relies on the putter. If that's what's going to be important this week, I got to like Kigo and I got to like Carlos Ortiz.
There's definitely some names down here. Maverick's certainly my favorite, just playing really consistent, can roll it just fine. I'm going to stick with a couple guys that I've been playing a little. HV3 didn't show a lot, but he was good with the putter again in terms of just not willing to kill him. He was just about a stroke north of positive, fine with the irons. It's not going to garner a ton of ownership because he hasn't done anything. Is Noren in play? Oh, I can't get this guy right. I haven't.
Not this guy again. I don't even have him written down. If that gives you,
that's the smart move.
If that gives you on the field any indication, I didn't even know it was in the field until you just said something. Maybe that's the better way to go about it. And we can just talk about our other specialty or poison is Eric Van Rooyen. Actually, good to see him make the cut last week after a win. Maybe the form is actually there and he's viable this week.
Yeah, I mean, listen, EVR, I'm not going to even get into how painful that's been, but he is playing good. I knew the talent was there, just like a lot of us did, and it's just starting to become a little more consistent. The price is right. There's no doubt. I have these guys. I don't know. To me, Maverick and some of these other names are a little...
Maverick and Mac? You going two M's there? Or oh, Mac Hughes interesting or no?
Well, Mackenzie Hughes. Wise is down here.
66. How about this guy again? 75 Eagles last week and had a nine. Yeah, had a nine, had a birdie streak. At 7,100, he was a great value. I'm not going to lie. He put up a ton of points again.
I mean, it's what he does.
But I'd like to play him next week. Wise and Champ next week, if they can both get through, they would be – I love targeting those guys in no cuts. I know we only got a couple minutes left. There are a few more guys. I did want to mention the Joel Damon – unbelievably, incredibly unlucky penalty. If you guys haven't heard about it, I talked to his caddy through a couple exchange on Twitter about it. Just go check my Twitter handle at DFSGolfer23 if you're interested in it. Incredibly unlucky. It did end up leading to a miscut for him. So I'm interested. Adam Hadwin and CT Pan, two guys that obviously drive the ball very accurately, but not far. Both running into good form. Both have a couple of top tens. Pan, obviously, the bronze medalist. I like both here as penny stocks.
I'm absolutely on board with this. I think that's where it starts to crumble a little bit. The low sixes, you can definitely go down there because I think the appeal of playing Rahm and Xander and these guys up top, it is you're getting some bang for your buck. But CT Pan, dare I say Kyle Stanley? I don't know if I can actually say that with the putter having lost for 2 months straight, 3 months straight, basically. You got to pick your poison down here. I'm going to lean on the tools and the ownership. And that's really where I think it becomes more and more important to leverage your teams properly and not go crazy at the bottom.
Agreed. Now, with MLB coming up, we're not going to have enough time to make our lineup. But what I'm going to do for you guys is I'll talk to Ben afterwards. I'm going to get one more question from him, which will help me do it. And I'm going to put the lineup in my Winning Element article. I'll link Ben in so that you guys can see it. Last week we had Louie, and we would have had to go through a lot of talking how to swap off of him. So we'll give us a pass. Obviously, I didn't keep Louie in the lineup that we did. I went down to Henley. So it might have cashed. It might not have. Thankfully, I didn't keep Louie in there. Our buddy Eric, who I saw at the beginning of the chat, forgot to upload his CSV while in Vegas. Maybe he had Louie in there. Eric, I'm sorry if you did. Okay. Chesson Hadley, Doug Gim, Hank Lebioda, Anrabon Lahiri, Brandon Hagee, Harry Higgs. I'm okay with all of them. I like Lebioda and Hadley a lot. Gim seems really cheap. So below 7,000, give me your top guy. We've talked about maybe 10 or 15. Who's the top one if you were playing one lineup that you would pick this week?
It would definitely be Maverick, but I almost don't consider him in that range. You know, he's at 69. I like Lebioda as well at 63. That's an extreme cheapie. The form has been good. The putter's cooled off a little bit, but irons and putting can carry you a pretty good amount here. So obviously, as we get closer, Wednesday night, Live Before Lock, me and Eric, we will be talking about it again. We'll have him refreshed from Vegas. We'll have you guys covered. And of course, if there's anything you didn't get here, at DFS Golfer 23, at Jazz Res DFS, certainly both of us available in Slack or on Twitter if you've got more questions.
And of course, if you guys want a couple of more tidbits on the betting side, Ben's contender video coming out tomorrow. And of course, our Osmo Odds channel, you guys will be getting into that. Our new YouTube channel, be sure to follow us there. Until next week, everybody, the BMW Championship top 70 golfers are going to make it. It is a no cut. We'll be back here to chat about it next Monday. And until Wednesday with Ben and Eric on Live Before Lock. Good luck, everybody. And we'll see you on the other side. Cheers.